biblical scholars have for many decades made a helpful distinction between the Jesus of history and the Christ of faith. The former refers to the historical man and what might be known about him. The latter refers to the projections of his editors and what it might be like to follow him. For shorthand purposes, I call the former Jesus and the latter his editors. The Gospels are a blend of both, and differentiating them is akin to dissecting a banana and berry smoothie. The reading this morning reflects this blend. Jesus was theologically more aligned with the Pharisees than he was with the Sadducees. Jesus' origins were in hillbilly, impoverished Galilee. An end-time resurrection was an expression of the hope that God would vindicate the poor and deal to the rich. Conversely, the Sadducees, being urbane and wealthy, had no time for an end-time judgmental God who would reverse their fortunes. In this episode, the Sadducees, being clever dicks, have a great story to trap Jesus with, namely the woman who outlived seven husbands. The wags might say, well, thank God in heaven she got a reprieve. Culturally, of course, remarrying was the social security that her original husband's family were obligated to provide. Luke and or his Jesus take this opportunity to make some claims about heaven, namely that there is no marriage, plenty of angels, and it's only for the worthy. He then goes on to base an argument, a grammatical argument, on the present tense continuous. The words I am, from the Moses burning bush theophany, infer that God continues in the present to be the God of those who have died. The argument says, therefore, that those who are dead are still alive in the sense that God is still alive. I suspect this was a standard Pharisaic argument for the resurrection. Luke and/or Jesus believed in a life after death, a marriageless heaven for the worthy, and intermediary heavenly beings called angels. The interesting thing, of course, is that many Christians, like me, don't believe what Jesus and/or Luke believed. I'm agnostic about life after death. I hope there is, but my faith isn't shattered if there isn't. I may change that opinion as I get older, mind you. Determining who is worthy, though, has always been a political game in the church. At its best, the church has said that that's God's call and God's call alone. However, the church, being the institution it is, can't resist the temptation of judging others. It's damned anyone and everyone who doesn't fit with the beliefs, morality, or authority structure of the elite. I personally think that if an afterlife exists, everyone's going to be there. For some, that will be heaven, for others, that will be hell. As for angels, I like angels. I just don't think that winged, metaphysical couriers literally exist. So if we don't believe that what Jesus and or his editors believed, does that make us non-Christians or heretics? When it comes to Jesus, are some of his beliefs optional for us? Did he get it wrong about some things? Are there central beliefs of his that every Christian should hold, and peripheral beliefs that can be ignored? Let me sketch some things about the historical Jesus. Firstly, he was Jewish. He was a Jewish rabbi, no less, of the Pharisaic tradition, albeit a liberal critic within it. The idea of his followers departing from the Jewish faith would have been anathema to him. Jesus' editors and the writings of Paul try to disguise this inconvenient truth. Although much is made of Jesus' liberal interpretation of the Torah, the total departure later on of the church from the Torah is something else. In a similar vein, I think it would be a mistake to imagine that Jesus saw no difference between Jews and Gentiles. The story of the Syrophoenician woman, where Jesus says to her, "Why should I take the Jewish children's food and throw it to you Gentile dogs?" indicates some of the racial prejudice that existed. While Jesus was inclusive for his time and culture, to assume that he was without prejudice is a statement of conjecture. Thirdly, there is his maleness. Although he was critical of the patriarchal family and the denigration of those who transgressed the purity laws, to say he was a believer in the equality of men and women like we imagine it to be today, or hope it to be today, is a fanciful reading into the text. Again, like his relationship to Gentiles, in his time and place, he crossed cultural and gender boundaries, and thus modeled for us an imperative to do likewise. But he was not your non-sexist, mutually committed, pro-equality male that we fathers all want our daughters to marry. Then there is his theology. Jesus had a personal male God whom he called Daddy. Further, this anthropomorphic deity lived above the clouds in the top tier of the universe called heaven. The second tier of the universe was earth, and the third, hell. We might like to think that Jesus thought of these metaphorically, but I doubt it. Jesus also believed he was going to come again during the lifetime of his disciples. Of course, as a good Jew, he wouldn't have had any truck with the Trinity or the great schemes of sanctification that involved his literal blood making God accept and love people. Now, some of Jesus' theology we might resonate with, and some we might be repelled by. A personal daddy God doesn't do much for me. A three-tier universe, I know, literally doesn't exist. Jesus didn't come again during his disciples' lifetime. However, the complicated formulas of Trinity and sanctification devised in the first 4 centuries of the church don't do a lot for me either. Can I still call myself Christian? I find the description of Jesus by the writer of Hebrews as the author or pioneer of our faith helpful. The Jesus of history was a trailblazer, an exemplar, a model for us. However, as with all authors and pioneers of social radical change, we need to be selective about what we wish to emulate. He wasn't perfect. The love he preached and lived in his context might have been, but in our context, revision is needed. This is where the author of the 4th Gospel is helpful in telling us that the Spirit of Jesus will lead us into all truth, Spirit of as distinct from the man. Truth was not fixed in first century Palestine. It was not fixed in a male Jewish rabbi. It is something that continues to unfold as we engage with our context in the light of what he taught. This is where the Roman Catholic Church and the Anglican Catholic tradition are helpful in asserting the interpretive function of the church to be more important than the literal words of the Bible. And conversely, the Protestant tradition of Anglicanism is helpful in acknowledging the church's tendency to be corrupted by its own interests and its need to be critiqued again and again by the biblical texts. In other words, there's this ongoing dialogue between text and interpretation, between the historical Jesus and the Christ of faith. The Christ of faith, unlike the Jesus of history, is not dead. Earlier I called the Christ of faith the editors. Well, Christ is more than that. Christ is the animating spirit of God, that lives on in every age within and among us, interpreting and editing and living the wisdom of the church, the Bible, and our changing world. The Christ Spirit at times brings to mind the example of the historical Jesus, and at other times ignores him. This is how it's always been. There are some things about Jesus and some passages of Holy Scripture that are best ignored.